1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. Today, Josh Planos, unable. It is Tuesday. Usually we have Josh on. Josh, unable to be with us this week. He'll be with us on Monday to talk about the college football championship game, so be sure and tune in on Monday when Josh returns. And as it worked out, it was perfectly because Ed Marlowe, for whatever reason, just showed up a day early, just out of the blue. Turns out he's got the all-purchase football banquet coming up. I guess that's Wednesday night, so you got a bunch of work you got to do for that, don't you?
Yeah, and I've got to get ready before I'll be leaving on the same road trip as you for Jacksonville State. Then I'll roll back on Friday, probably cover a little high school basketball or something, and then roll out Saturday for Tennessee Tech. So big-time basketball week this week for both Murray State and First Region.
Are you driving, or are you having to go with Adam Wells?
I think I'm going to fly with Adam Wells. We're going to take the Paxton Jet that we sold in the mid-90s. I think we're going to buy it back and take it. And,
did you see the picture of the Jat that we have?
Yeah, the Jat, the Jaw Jet. Yeah. I like that, the Jat. That's good. It's really clever. I still don't know how you were able to Photoshop that as quickly as you were, but I'm impressed with your digital skills artistic ability.
I can't afford Photoshop. I use Fidoshop. You know, it's a knockoff.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what.
It's like a dollar store Photoshop.
And plus, I've seen Photoshop. Like, that looks pretty complicated. This is like, do this, do that, hit save. Okay.
It's clever. So, I like it. Jaws picture on the nose of an airplane.
Well, I'll put that out there on Thursday.
Yeah.
Wednesday. On Wednesday when we fly down there.
Down to Jacksonville State.
Right, right. So we'll do that.
Yeah, all-purchase football. I'm really excited about it, actually. Obviously can't reveal anything, but be watching on social media late Wednesday night as we announce the team one by one.
So is it I forget year to year. There's so many awards. Is this just an all first team offense, defense?
So there's 24 players, generally 12 on offense, 12 on defense, or 10 or 11 and 11, and a couple of special teamers, flex players, if you will. Sometimes there's just a kid that gets, you know, several votes at different positions, but doesn't really make it in like one specific slot. I'm not going to be the person that denies someone that shows up on 9 of 15 ballots but doesn't make the all-purchase team. If you make 60% of the ballots and you're on different positions, you're an all-around football player. That's how high school football works. Very rarely do you see you see quarterbacks and wide receivers be themselves and not have to play another position. But especially here in Western Kentucky, there are a lot of kids at the 1A, 2A, 3A level that play both sides of the football. And, you know, you should be rewarded for that if you're really good at both. So we have a couple of kids that happen to make the team that were kind of like that, have really good stats on both sides of the ball. And we'll announce a lot of that on Wednesday night, along with a player of the year and a coach of the year. So really exciting stuff.
That should be fun. Now, high school basketball in the thick of everything right now. Before we talk, you're going to be covering a game tonight. But before we talk about that, is because I try to follow this. There doesn't seem to be that clear cut as like it's theirs and no one else can touch them, boys or girls. Am I correct on that?
Well, I wrote the other day that I thought the boys basketball race at this moment was a two-horse type of situation with McCracken and Marshall. Obviously, Marshall has played a very rigorous schedule, as has McCracken, with two elite athletes, Zion Harmon and Marshall County, with a lot of that talent around him, Tyler Powell, Tyler Stokes, Bryce Flatt, Jay Nemo, the list goes on. I mean, Terry Birdsong's got a really, really good club over there. Lost a couple of games they probably wish they hadn't, but otherwise have played fairly well against what has been a very tough schedule. And the same with McCracken. I mean, you've got Jackson Civils, Ian McCune, you've got Ronnie Jones, you've got Noah Dumas. I mean, there's a lot of talent over there as well under Berlin Brower, and they've played a very rigorous schedule. Nearly came away with a couple of upset victories in the Kings of the Bluegrass against Mayo, lost in overtime, and then lost again to Madisonville North Hopkins there in the second region. They're really, really freaking good, and lost by 3 to them. So I'd say those two teams are probably the prohibitive favorites to make it to the regional championship. But then you've got Murray, which their schedule hasn't been too terribly difficult. But I think Sunday's win over Prodigy Prep really needs to open a few eyes. They play Paducah-Tillman tonight. Tillman's been pretty solid this year. But I'd say Murray is probably starting to enter that race, especially as we get closer to All-A basketball, which is next week. I'd have to think they're the cautious favorite to win the All-A regional tournament. But I say that, and, you know, with boys basketball, anything can happen. So, I think it's going to be really interesting. And then with girls, I mean, I'd still say it's McCracken and Marshall in that regard as well. But, I mean, you still got to throw Graves County in that conversation. They're starting to really, really put some things together, you know, under Brandon. And then you've got Callaway, which is still Callaway. I know Mayfield just beat them, but I'm going to give Mayfield a little bit of credit here. That's a girls basketball team that probably no one is talking about, but they are defensively gifted. But then you've got Charlie Settle at Callaway and some of the help that she's got, and Murray, you know, has come along. That Murray's biggest issue, I think, has been that they've had a couple of games where they've really had a hard time closing in the fourth quarter. Instead of being, they could be just as easily 9-5 as they are 5-9. So, I think both the boys and the girls in the first region are two horse races, but I think you, first of all, you never know how the draw is going to shake up. I mean, anything can happen in that regard. District tournaments are going to change a lot of things, and we'll see who's healthy by the end of the season. Key for Murray is Hunter Utley's back, so I think that's going to help them a lot moving down the stretch.
They have the All-A Classic. It actually begins this weekend, but it's teams, let's be brutally honest, that play that will not be going to the state tournament, and the teams that will be playing next week. However, also starting Friday night, it is the 2A sectionals. Callaway County will be hosting that, so this is sort of a new tournament, and both the Callaway teams each have opportunities to win this and advance to Owensboro and the state level.
Yeah, they really do, and I actually, you know, I understand where it's coming from, and I believe this is year two of the Class 2A tournament. I know what people are trying to do, and as long as you're getting sponsorships and as long as you're getting people to pay for it and do it the right way and make gate and things like that, I'm fine with the tournament. It's a great way for teams to get quality level opponents, especially if RPI is going to start taking over as much as people think it's going to. And, you know, if you're going to use lit ratings, RPI ratings, or anything like that to start determining how the state tournament should fall together, instead of a blind draw, I'm a fan of classified basketball during the regular season. I understand that the Sweet 16 in Kentucky is one of those untouchable things where, you know, people want an all-massive tournament of all walks of life, so to speak, all walks of schools coming in and playing for the same championships. Now, it's no different than the NCAA tournament, and it's why we find the NCAA tournament to be so fascinating, because Cinderella really does exist. There is really a magical kingdom, and they can win the national championship. People feel the same way about a state tournament when it comes to basketball. I understand that most of Kentucky sports are all classified at other levels other than, like, golf, per se. But, you know, basketball, in my opinion, I feel like it's probably one of those untouchable things. Now, we could, however, I think, in due time, see a reasonable seeding for the state tournament.
Yeah, I think that might happen.
I think because
the classification's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, not classification, but, I mean, seeding would take care of classification, I think. I mean, you can have upsets. You can have a 16-1. We've seen it happen. We have statistically in college basketball seen it happen. Now, I understand sometimes in high school basketball, the haves and the have-nots, it ends up being a little bit of a different story. But it's why you play the game, you know, and you go out and you play the toughest schedule you possibly can. If you're one of those smaller schools that happens to think that this is your year, go play a tougher schedule. It's exactly what they do in college basketball, and it's how life works. So.
And here's what I like, and I've seen a few boys' Sweet 16s personally, but have covered for about a decade the girls' Sweet 16s. And the thing that I like is, you know, you have usually two or three power teams among the 16. There's two or three that are there just because you got to have a winner of a region.
You won your region.
They won the region, and they're there.
Congratulations.
And they're probably not going to have a chance. But then you have some of those right above that 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 have some talent, not as much as the upper tier, but I've seen the upsets because in any pressure situation, sometimes players excel and sometimes, I don't want to say choke, but they just don't perform to expectations. That's where you get your upsets.
It's just not their night.
They're 16, 15, 17-year-old kids. My gosh, that's a lot to put on you, especially when you think, we think we're coming up here with a chance to win the state tournament, and you look up, and you're probably playing a team that you expect to beat by 20, and you're down by 5 going into the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Whoa! Uh-oh. We may lose, and I've seen it happen. I mean, it's unbelievable when it does.
I think the atmosphere of Rupp Arena alone really can change games. I have seen some raucous crowds, and you're not going to draw 15, 16,000 to a high school basketball game, but you can still draw 6 or 7, and when they bear down in that lower bowl, especially the two student sections with their cheerleading all right on top of you,
yeah,
it becomes a sweaty, sweaty situation. And you've still got what I would consider, and I know it's not nearly as many radio crews, as it used to be, but you still have a long line of media that are just waiting to pounce on, you know, the next coach that wins, the upset, the big time photo, the big shot. And I mean, like I said, I mean, 50, 60 journalists, radio, newspaper, digital, all so on and so forth, photographers, all waiting to just capture that moment. It's a really high-pressure situation, and God, Neil, we'll be there before we know it.
And the move to Rupp, and it's there until basically what I've been told, unless they get a big-time sponsor for the girls' tournament or something, it's going to stay there for a foreseeable future anyway. But I go back in the back when I'm doing my pregame interviews, when I watch the teams come in maybe for the game after the one we're doing, it's really fun. Because, you know, many of these kids, they've been immersed in UK basketball, and to get to play in that arena, they want pictures made by the trophies, pictures made by uniforms hanging in the hallway. It's a big deal for them.
I mean,
it's awesome for them just to play there. I mean, they really like it.
I will never forget the Callaway team that I covered with Parker and I'm trying to think of it, Skylar Hunter and golly, I'm trying to think of everybody that was on that team. Clay Smotherman and, you know, Wagner, Connor Wagner, and so on and so forth. And I will never forget it was Wade Carter who, as the Callaway team was leaving the arena, I was the last one to leave, obviously, right in the dark, trying to finish and beat deadline. They had just lost to Bowling Green. And Wade Carter is like on his phone, like getting a quick video of Rupp Arena all around, like a panorama. I'll just never forget that image because that's a memory that he'll never forget. Win or lose, you know, they had the epic, you know, overtime, you know, triple overtime win against Knott County Central, against Cameron Justice, who is obviously now at Western now as a graduate transfer, but you know, that's a Callaway team that nearly had a chance to make the Final Four, came just short of it. But that team will never forget. And I just remember writing my story and Wade Carter, like, taking his phone and taking pictures of Rupp Arena as they're walking out to go get on the bus, go back to the hotel with their run finished. And it's a dark arena. Pictures probably didn't even turn out that great, but he just wanted to remember what it meant to be the late night game at Rupp Arena. And that's, you know, that's something that that he'll tell his kids and his grandkids about for the rest of his life.
I like the Class A. I know when Rochelle was coach at Murray High, asked her about the classification. She says, as long as we continue to have the Class A, she's fine with it the way it is. She says, because I get a chance to win two state championships. And it recognizes that. I did a championship where Covington Holy Cross won the small school state championship, the All-A Classic.
Against Murray.
And then won the legit championship, the KHSAA championship. And we, you know, on the broadcast said, they're the small school state champions because when you win that title, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have the 2A, you know, you'll have a winner from that. And I think long as the schools are happy with that, plus they get the opportunities, like, you know, if we're good enough, I want to have a chance to win the whole thing and beat everybody.
Right. If that's their way of getting their 30 games in the regular season, I'm fine. I don't care. As long as it doesn't intercede with what district play is supposed to be and, you know, and messes with certain schedules in between the season, you know, in the season, I don't have a problem with it. Do a 2A, do a 3A, do a 6A, do a 7A, whatever you want to do. Have as many A tournaments as you want. Just don't make, like, don't let them, like, overplay what district play is supposed to be going into those moments. Because district play a lot of times happens, you know, late December, right into January.
Right.
It's also when those tournaments have to be played because March is quickly upon us. You can't be playing those tournaments and not be ready for the state tournament. That's the only thing that I hope doesn't happen. I hope that these class tournaments, if they continue to exist or even build, don't intercede with what district and regional play is supposed to be later on.
All A's done a really good job. It's been around for years. The 2A, it's its second season, and the fact they just kind of do it really over two weekends. You can kind of pick your weekend to do the first round in your section, and this is Callaway's week to play in theirs.
Right.
And then they have the state, and it's at the Owensboro Sports Center. It's been refurbished from what I understand. I haven't been there in a long time, but it's kind of a neat deal, and I think it's good. Like you said, in a lot of schools, rather than have that 1 or 2 week gap, they have contingency games scheduled, I guess, with the, hey, if we happen to go to the state in this thing, we want to get out of that, and, you know, we'll make it up next year with another game. And I think everybody's kind of cool with those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk Racer basketball, as we have, I know, a lot of fans wanting to hear us discuss that. Last week, Murray State with a couple of wins, beating UT Martin and Southeast Missouri, both by double digits. And, man, they shot the ball really well last week, Ed. Overall, they shot it well from three range, although better in one game than in the other, and dominated the paint, shot just incredible as far as their inside players, and then the bench points in game two were just off the charts.
You take a look, it's two different offenses, and I say that, I mean, it really wasn't, but game one against UT Martin, statistically the worst three-point defense in the country at 42%, Murray took advantage of that. And they didn't overshoot it. I mean, they shot 15 times. They made 10 of them. That's a high rate last time I checked. 66.7%.
If they could do that every game, get 15 to 20 shots, they will be the national champions.
Yeah.
Or anyone else who can do that will be.
Yeah.
If they do that every game.
Yeah, if they do that every game and shoot 66.7%.
Yeah.
I mean, Tevin Brown went 4-for-6. Javion Eves returned to the lineup, went 4-for-4. Probably Javion's best game as a Racer, I'd say. He's had some big shots in his career, but if you want to look at a complete game, that man's stat line against UT Martin was terrific. I believe 19 points, 3 or 4 assists. I believe he had 3 or 4 rebounds, and I think he only had either 1 or 0 turnovers.
Javion's, Here's an oddity. His best game of the season, in my opinion, was that one. And Jay Holiday's best game was the one. Both of them coming off concussion. So I don't know. Is that good for you, maybe?
I guess.
I don't know. But
just ready to get back on the court.
I guess so. You'd think it would be maybe worse where they'd have some rust, but it didn't really show up.
No, and then obviously UT Martin has a ton of offensive firepower. I mean, look at what Parker Stewart and Quentin Dove do. Look at what Quentin Dove did against Austin Peay.
Yeah.
Did you see that in the loss? He had 32 and 12?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
I think so.
In a loss at Austin Peay? That is absurd. And Parker had 33 against the Racers in a loss. Went off for 5 three-pointers in the second half. I don't want to say that the Racers nearly let it slip, but, I mean, UT Martin got within 6 twice in the second half, both times courtesy of some, and Cernovich too. Thought Cernovich got really, really hot there in the second half.
He was sick. He missed the Austin Peay game, so that really hurt them quite a bit when they didn't have him.
That makes a difference.
Got sick after the Murray game, and I don't know if he even traveled with the team.
That's really unfortunate because he had a heck of a second half against the Racers. And that being said, the Racer three-point defense hasn't been bad. It just UT Martin got hot in that second half. Then they turn around and hold, SEMO to, 4-for-17,
yeah.
I think? Yeah, and that's, you know, SEMO's still got a couple of decent players. I really like Gable's pretty solid. Skylar Hogan's not too bad at all. Alex Caldwell is pretty good. But SEMO really, really struggled with paint defense because the Racers, you know, didn't force the three. You noticed it would have been easy for them to bomb away after shooting that, and instead they just fed the big men. And you look at Anthony. Another 7-for-7 game for Devin Gilmore, second of his career.
8-for-8 last week overall.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Last time I checked. But you take Devin Gilmore, Anthony Smith, KJ Williams had 15 of his 18 in that first half to put the game away. basically. Seymour had a couple of times where they cut it to about 8 or 9. You know, a couple good big-time threes, good shots. They had more offensive rebounds than defensive rebounds. But the Racers still out-rebounded them by 14. And that we're going to continue to see that calling card. We're going to continue to see guys like Anthony, Devin, you know, Tevin rebounded his rear off against Semo, especially to start that second half, basically just ripping basketballs away from defenders. You're going to continue to see this as the main – you're looking for an identity. Rebounding is the identity of this team. Don't look at anything else. Do not look at – I mean, if you want to look at defense, that's fine. The three-point defense is improving. These are all becoming, I guess, signature parts. But if you're going to put a stamp on a game – their stamp is rebounding, and it's going to be that way for the rest of the season. The true test will come when they play a team that maybe does out-rebound them. Can they still win the basketball game? I don't know if we'll even see it. Damon Robinson, KJ Williams, Anthony Smith, Tevin Brown, Devin Gilmore, all of these guys are just rebounding at an incredulous rate. Particularly on the defensive glass. They're one of the best in the country on the defensive glass. And I just feel like that's really going to bode well for them, because rebounding is something you can't really take away. Like, you're shooting, it comes and goes. But, like, as long as you continue the boxing out effort and the work on the glass, that doesn't ever disappear. That can be a true, like, brick-and-mortar thing that this team does. Yeah, the three-pointers, defense and offense, you'd love to be a little bit better. Some of the interior defense, I'm sure, as guys cut to the basket, you'd love for that to be more improved. But you still have 16 conference games to go, plus a potential run in the OVC tournament. A lot can change there. Rebounding is here to stay, I would think, with the size of this team.
The Racers did get Chico Carter Jr. back. He's still playing with a wrap on his hand. But he looked pretty good overall. You can tell his shot from the field isn't where it's going to be. Shot his free throws well, handled the ball well, took care of it. And then Javion Eaves, as you mentioned, he came back. I know fans, I was asked twice last night at the Hey Coach Show, what about Darnell Coart? I can't say I have any confidence he'll return anytime soon. Doesn't seem to be anything along that line. And also, I'm not sure about Breon Whitley. He just continues to have pain issues with his leg. So the Racers it's the old you got what you got right now. That may be where the Racers are. But thankfully, they do have, as long as they have this group, they have depth inside, they have depth outside, and they could go with this if they had to. And I asked Matt last night, your guy likes playing seven usually, and he sort of admitted he sort of likes playing nine right now.
Yeah. Well, and I think what it's ended up doing, you know, you've had some people question, like, Jason Holiday's offense. Why is he in the rotation? Well, yeah. You know, I understand Jason Holiday's offense is non-existent at the moment, but he's an unselfish passer, first of all, and an elite defender. It's not really – I think that's a no-brainer, you know. And if you're putting in the work in practice, then you're going to get on the floor. That's how this works. Matt McMahon is closing in on 100 career wins. Pretty sure if they're on the floor, it's not on accident. It's not like, I just get in there, whatever, I don't care. Like, there's a reason people are on the floor. There's a metric that they are working on as to why those guys are on the floor. So, sorry, armchair fans, if you don't like a specific player on the floor, I don't know how to help you. Because this is the coaching staff that's put together nearly 100 wins since McMahon's been, you know, the head coach. I understand. Maybe Jason Holiday's offense doesn't exactly just bring, like, starlights to your eyes. But, again, this is a guy that's not forcing his offense. The offense does exist. He was able to average double digits throughout his JUCO career. And he's not out searching for it. Instead, he's passing the ball to guys that he knows he can trust. He'll work it in at some point. He's already had a couple of games now where he's made a couple of three-pointers. Well, the one game, they made a couple of three-pointers. He's not, you know, he's an elite defender. I mean, that's what they have him for.
Sure.
They can work on the offense. Defense is what he's on the floor for, period. You know, and again, I agree with you about Darnell and Breon. I mean, I've been told there's just a lot of pain management going on right now.
Sure.
There are some injury concerns that are limiting both of those guys. And from what I've been told, it's kind of a week-to-week basis type deal. If they come in and there's a strong effort in practice and there's no pain and it's pain-free, maybe they'll get a shot at it. But, I mean, Darnell hasn't shown any signs of the pain going away anytime soon. And the same with Breon Whitley. So, you know, you take those two guys into consideration. Matt Smith continues to be, I would imagine, I don't want to make too many assumptions, but he seems like a redshirt candidate. Just from his health concerns, that the very serious injury that he had sustained in the offseason. So, I mean, these are guys that you wish were part of the, you know, contributing factor. But, I mean, all of a sudden, you look at where the Racer rotation is right now. If I'm a fan, I'd have to be comfortable with it. I mean, you're looking really deep at guard still, especially with the return of Chico, and you're looking really deep in the front court. I mean, Devin Gilmore. I mean, Neil. You and I talked a lot about this last year at the beginning of the last season. You weren't sure he was ever going to get a chance to see the court.
Yeah.
And now he is truly a contributing factor. And not just some pseudo, we'll toss you in the final 8 minutes of a blowout. He is part of the rotation. He is legitimately a factor on defense. He continues to be an elite shot blocker and rebounder, and his athleticism is off the charts. And he continues to carve out some sort of a role due to his work.
And first man off the bench, NCAA tournament, Devin Gilmore.
Right.
That's who it was last year. And honestly, we had discussed, I don't know if we discussed it on the show, but off, I'm like, you know, I don't know. He might be a guy that's just unhappy, never getting playing time, might be a transfer candidate. And lo and behold, what, 2 or 3 weeks later, he's getting major minutes and excelling, and it was obvious, okay, that is not going to happen.
No, not only was that not going to happen, but that's how this works. Behind the scenes, talk about a guy like Jason Holiday. They're working on that offense. Shaq Buchanan's three-pointer got better over 2 years. It's not like they're just like, all right, Jason, get out there and rebound. Get out there and – like, these guys are working, toiling on a day-by-day basis to get better in the things that they're not excelling at. Jason's working on his offense. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's trying to attack the basket. He's just not forcing up. You look at his turnover rate, he's not really even turning the basketball over that much. But what he does is he kind of reminds me of a cornerback in football. You know how cornerbacks like don't get stats if you don't throw toward them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's that guy.
Yeah.
He really does a good job containing guys off the dribble. And if they don't shoot against him, then there's no stat to be had. There's no rebound to get. There's no interception. There's no steal. He just denies a guy what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that sometimes, that maybe that's all they got him for. Maybe that's all this staff needed him for this season.
The Racers will play Jacksonville State. This is a team that they split with last year, the regular season game also. At Jacksonville, they lost 88-68, but then came back and picked up a 2-point victory in the semifinals of the OVC tournament. And full disclosure, when the Racers did play at JSU, John Morant was probably maybe at 70-75%. Had suffered the ankle injury against Belmont, able to kind of muddle through it a little bit against Tennessee State in a blowout, and then heads to Jacksonville, and it just didn't go his way. Had a lot of turnovers. Not the better of games for Morant. But this year, it's a different Jacksonville State team. They lost 4 starters. They have 8 newcomers. I thought this would be a team that would slide back maybe to the 4th or 5th place spot, because it was my understanding that Elias Harden, the transfer from Xavier, who is an elite scorer, would have to sit out a year to become eligible. But they got a waiver for him. He's eligible now, and even though he's not scoring at the rate I'm sure that they hope he will score at, and that he will by later in the season, he's on the team that really fills a void. And as any Ray Harper team is, this is a tremendous defensive team, as they're holding teams to 30% field goal shooting from three-point range, 37, they're shooting 37% themselves, but it's the last 4 or 5 games where they've really been good. They're holding, in OVC play, teams to 23% shooting from three-point range, and just about 34%, I believe I had, from the field, and also starting to make their three-point shots, 41% in OVC games.
Yeah, not ideal for opponents.
Yeah.
Not a great environment for Murray State or anyone to really kind of walk into at the moment. Not only is Jacksonville State playing fairly well right now, and again, they were playing pretty bad to start the season. And that's,
yeah, they were.
You know, and that's a lot of teams. The Racers weren't playing great either. Everybody was trying to get some wheels underneath their chassis, and that makes complete sense that you would struggle a little bit. But you take a look at, you know, Murray State's probably lightly favored right now for this 8 o'clock ESPNU matchup, but you take a look at, you know, look, I believe it was you that mentioned it first, two or three of their top scorers coming off the bench. And they're bringing in a hockey line, basically, of guys that are bringing in some offense. And they're led currently by former Christian County star DeTorian Ware, who's averaging 11.9 points per game, 39.7% shooting from the field. He's also leading them in rebounding off the bench, 6.2 boards per game. At least that's what ESPN's got for him right now.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's pretty good, considering he's a sophomore. And if you remember, in last year's semifinal game, DeTorian Ware hit a couple of huge shots and probably should have gotten the last look for three to win that game for JSU. But, you know, obviously the Racers did a really good job on scramble defense. But that's bygones and bygones. DeTorian Ware, Jakara Cross, you know, feel like he's been there an eternity. He's been a pretty strong player for Ray Harper. And then you're going to have to help me with the name on this. Who's the 6'10 forward?
Martin Robe.
Yeah.
6'10 junior.
Yeah, 6'10 junior that no one else wanted but Jacksonville State. And now he's canning three-pointers like it's nobody's business.
45%.
And he's 6'10.
Yeah. And it's not like he's shooting two. He's shooting 5, 6, 7, 8 a game.
He's got the green light.
Yeah. But he's not your tip. He's not the guy, boy, if you can't go out or he'll go in and dunk it on you. No, he won't. He's not an inside guy, not really an inside threat. He's an outside threat. But that's something, I mean, come on, in the OVC, you don't deal with that. You don't go out and guard 6'10 guys and shoot a bunch of threes. KJ Williams, he'll shoot one or two a game usually, sometimes three, but not like this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's unbelievable. So it's going to be something that they'll have to deal with. Heading into their last game, they actually did bring their top three scorers off the bench. However, I think Kane Henry scored a little more than Derek St. Hilaire. So now St. Hilaire is averaging 8.5, and Henry Kane averaging 8.6. But still, I haven't watched enough Jacksonville State basketball. But from what I know of Ray Harper, I'm guessing he establishes his defense early, then subs these guys in and brings some instant offense in for them.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And you made the mention, Neil. I mean, you turn right around and go to Tech, which the Racers just haven't played terrific basketball at Tech over the last few years.
Well, they had us in the under four media beat last year, and then some moron fan said, let's shout overrated at number 12. And that wasn't really something they should have done.
And then Devin Gilmore was huge in that game. You talk about, I mean, he had three blocks in the final 3 minutes. It was unbelievable what he was able to do just to provide a lift for that team. And so, you know, I mean, it's a tough road slate. And really, honestly, McMahon mentioned this on Monday. You got four in a row here. You come home to Belmont. That's good.
Yeah.
And who just somehow inexplicably lost to SIU Edwardsville to start their conference.
No one knows how.
No one knows.
Belmont they lost. They just looked up and like, whoa, they got more points than we do.
And the game's over.
How did that happen?
Yeah, well, it doesn't help that they shot, 6-for-80 from three or something like that?
Yeah, terrible.
Not ideal. That probably won't happen again. And you'll notice Nick Mazinski absolutely exploded against Eastern Illinois. I think he went for 300 points and 20,000 rebounds, but I mean, they destroyed EIU after that. You knew that was probably just a reversal of fortune. EIU was probably like, oh man, really, SIUE, this is what you did to us. You awakened the beast. But I mean, you take a look at this four game stretch for Murray State that's all on the road. You come back to Belmont, you really got to take care of business on the road. You really don't want to be too far behind standings.
Yeah.
And then get to Belmont, and Belmont be revved up to play that game, because they're going to be revved up to play that game. That's one of the best rivalries in the league right now.
You get them twice. That's why if you can win these, beat Belmont there, you got a two-game cushion on them.
Yeah.
And if you were to go to Nashville and lose, still up one, unless something else happens.
And you've got a stretch, too, later in the season. And Matt's right. You got a stretch later in the season where you've got 5 of 6 on the road again before you come home and have that home cushion to finish out.
This won't be an 18-0 year for anybody.
Just
an FYI, it isn't going to be.
I just don't. Are you writing that down now?
I'll take it right now.
You'll take it right now.
It's just there's just a lot of parity and a lot of tough places to play on the road.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Racer basketball. I mean, yeah, I guess mathematically 18-0 is still on the board for the Racers, but the one thing that I will say is, you know, Belmont's now lost at home. And the Racers still don't have a road win. I know they don't
have
a ton of road opportunities underneath their belt, but, I mean, JSU just came away with two road wins this past week at Morehead and at EKU. Now, are Morehead and EKU going to be better than people think? I don't know. It's two games into the conference slate. I need to know a little bit more. I know EKU really struggled there for about a month and a half, and I know Morehead has had a couple of struggles as well, but generally speaking, that is a tough road stretch. Just with the distance alone. JSU literally took their longest road trip of the season and went and they didn't thump Morehead. They beat Morehead, and then they beat EKU. That's pretty indicative of what JSU is still capable of doing. Tech, as you mentioned prior to the podcast here, they've had a couple of close calls with some really good teams. Record not really indicative of what they're capable of doing. And a new head coach in John Pelfrey, the former Wildcat. So, I mean, we'll see. It's a fun week, and the road is never kind to not just Racer basketball, but college basketball teams in general.
Let's talk women's basketball. The Racer women, they have been plagued at times by an awful first quarter. And last week, Thursday, no exception against Tennessee Martin. I mean, they were absolutely hammered in the first quarter. Never really recovered. Numerous turnovers that led to buckets for Tennessee Martin.
Right.
And, you know, it was a week when you knew it would be difficult. You hope they have to split. But after seeing the Thursday games, like, I'm not sure if they can split this trip. I really don't. And then Sadie Hill happened.
Yep.
I'm watching a game, and I in the second half, like, man, hey, she hit a three. I don't remember hitting one this year, but that's kind of cool. And then she hit another one, and then another one. And holy smokes, where did this come from? I thought maybe they had replaced her with a clone or something. Turns out it was the real Sadie Hill doing that. And Rochelle Turner this week said they knew she was capable of games like that. If she can deliver, not 19 and banging in all the threes, but deliver similar offense, this is going to bring this team a weapon that I didn't know they had.
Well, and I think, you know, it's something that they've kind of been waiting for, and I think it's something Sadie's been waiting for. You know, I think the one thing that was tough for her is, you know, she came in and immediately had the ACL. You know, and the same with Macy Gibson. She immediately came in and had the ACL. So, I mean, you remember last year, there was a lot of braces on that sideline last year. And really unfortunate because it was just part of it. But, you know, all of a sudden, Sadie, she hasn't shed the brace yet. She still has it. But, I mean, she's operating like a post player. She had, I believe, 19 points on 4 3-pointers, all 19 in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, and she was everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere. If she didn't have a steal, she was forcing a jump ball. She was grabbing a rebound. I mean, she was doing everything for Murray in that second half. And Macy, of course, closed out. Macy Turley, 5 for 14. Again, perfect from the free throw line as she continues to approach infinity on her free throw percentage. I believe her free throw percentage right now is 93%.
That's why when it's a 4 or 5 point Racer lead at the end, you're beat.
Yeah.
They'll get the ball to her. You got a fouler, and she'll make the free throws.
Yeah. She's borderline automatic, and she's already twice this season made, what, 20-plus stretches, beat her own record for stretch of free throw shooting. But, you know, when you're that automatic from the free throw line, you know, like a gumball machine, up quarter, here comes the gumball. That's what I think about Macy Turley's free throws. It's like, well, if I see gumballs, they're going to roll down in my hand.
Right.
It's how automatic her free throws are. But, you know, Sadie Hill's explosion. SEMO, by the way, came in with the most wins in the league and the league lead. They were the statistically best team. They were 1-0 in conference play. They came to Murray on Saturday and just could not hit the broadside of a barn. They couldn't do it. They shot under 30%. Murray State, by the way, Parker Griffith's stat here incoming. Murray State women's basketball is 7-0, holding teams when they hold teams to 40% or less. this season.
How about that?
It's a good stat. It's a good stat. I thought that was a good little nugget right there. 7-0 when teams are 40% or less from the field against them. And I mean, naturally, that makes sense. I mean, if you're playing that well defensively, you're limiting teams to an ineffective offense, you're obviously going to win a lot of basketball games. But it seems to be, while rebounding will continue to be an issue, SEMO was able to come away with 27 offensive rebounds, but they came away with more offensive rebounds than defensive rebounds. Murray State actually handled the defensive glass fairly well, but there were several situations. I mean, Alexis Burpo was your leading rebounder against SEMO, 13 rebounds.
Wow, yeah.
By the way, just going to continue to stress, she's a Division I basketball player.
Yeah.
She's doing pretty well. Not shooting the ball particularly great. Really isn't anybody on this team shooting the ball particularly great right now. Even Macy, she's kind of struggled a little bit in conference play, but I mean, that's teams know. You have to harass the heck out of her. But what they're doing is they're defending their rears off. I mean, SEMO couldn't bear by a three. And they went 3 for 17 from three.
I loved watching Burpo the other night in the closing minute of the game against SEMO. They knew they had to foul. Wanted to pick out somebody to foul. She's had some issues at the line. She gets the ball. Here they come. And she is like, yeah, no, you're not fouling me. Immediately to Macy Turley. Like, how many times has she done that in games in her life? I don't even know that she thought about it. She just saw she gets the ball.
Yeah.
And then you can go foul her, and then she'll make free throws, and
right.
You're not winning.
So. And I think, again, something else that people need to realize is this is another team. You expected to be a lot more senior leadership on the team. There is not. It is Sakia Mack, who, by the way, had 8.6 rebounds and 4 blocks against SEMO off the bench, which is pretty good. A couple turnovers, a couple times where she traveled, got away with a walk, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, is women's basketball going to win 10, 11, 12 games in league play this year? I don't know. You know, you kind of saw the two sides of the team last week.
You see it this week, too.
Yeah, this week's tough. I mean, you've got a JSU team that's beatable, but still really athletic, really good, very similar to both UT Martin and SEMO, and ranked ahead of the Racers in the preseason. And then Tech is Tech. Kim Rosamond and that team, they're terrific.
They almost beat them last year, though.
Yeah, they did, both teams.
You know? It was unreal.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, again, the road is tough in college basketball. But this is a team that does try to hang its hat defensively and work. It's hard to say it. I don't want to call it like a bless you situation, but they work so hard on rebounding. They work to get it, and they just aren't big enough to do it. There's sometimes your heart and your will just isn't enough. Like, sometimes you do need some athleticism and some size.
Well, it is. And I think Rochelle, to a point, and not just Rochelle, every coach says rebounding isn't about size. It's about heart and desire. However, if you have player A with heart and desire, player B with heart and desire equally, and then player B has a lot more athletic ability, they're quicker, taller, they're going to get more rebounds.
It's just
the way it is.
That's basketball math.
That's just life. Okay.
Yeah.
Because they're better than you. That's why.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have more heart and desire than they do, and they don't have it, you can get some of those rebounds.
You can get some of those boards. And that's what some of those rebounds were against SEMO. I mean, some of them were just flailing rebounds. Like, I will get this basketball. And it's like, okay.
But as Chris Hatcher said, their team, they love them too. They work with them to rebound and to translate
they got
that
scholarships
football.
Too.
They have scholarships too. Their mom, daddies love them, and their coaches work with them to make them good players. So
it's true.
Yeah, it kind of goes both ways. Before I let you go, I know you have racquetball calling.
Oh, you're good.
Will we or will we not see Ja Morant in the dunk contest? What's your take?
Man, that's tough. I think we'll have to find out fairly soon too, because the dunk contest is February 15th. It's right after. Valentine's Day. I mean, that's 5 weeks away now. I mean, which, by the way, where in the world is this month and this year already going? Which just 27 days ago. But I don't really have a ton of insight on it. I'm sure his health is a key factor. Chris Haynes from Yahoo Sports reported on that. I know it's something that he obviously has to mull. I'm fine with that. That makes complete sense. What I will say is that I am sure Ja is very, very capable of understanding what it could do for his brand, even if he doesn't win.
Yeah.
If he comes in and has one show-stopping dunk, You know, the one thing I will say is the competition already has a couple of key entrants in it. You've got the guy from Derrick Jones Jr. from Miami. Zach LaVine's got an invitation. We know how athletic and terrific he can be at the dunk contest. The 2008 winner, Superman himself, Dwight Howard, has accepted an invitation.
Is Zach Singh with Maroon 5, or am I confusing him with someone else?
Zach LaVine is not with Maroon 5.
Okay, all right.
That's good. It's good.
But I would watch him dunk if he, I mean, sing and dunk. That's not bad. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's Adam LaVine.
Adam. Right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
all
right. Not.
I don't know the NBA as well as I should, obviously.
Zach LaVine is an elite point guard.
Okay.
Really an elite two guard, but tries to, I mean, he kind of has to handle the point duties in Chicago. Elite. I mean, this is a guy that can dunk from the free throw line. So, was acquired in a trade from Minnesota. So, but what I would like to see, I would like to see John Morant go and win the thing either in a Racer Gold jersey or a Vancouver Grizzlies throwback or some morph of both. I don't know, some hybrid jersey wearing his SpongeBobs. Just destroy the competition. I mean, we have seen time and again this year just the amount of show-stopping dunks he's already produced. And a lot of them aren't necessarily even off the dribble. He's catching lobs from Jay Crowder, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson. These are guys that are feeding him the basketball in transition, and there's no one there that can help him. Then you have his posterizing dunks like the one he had against Aaron Bain and the near one that he had against Kevin Love. If he can do those kind of things at the dunk contest, he'll win it. I mean, honestly. I mean, imagine this. He doesn't know Dwight Howard very well, but imagine recreating like Kryptonite versus Superman this year. If Dwight Howard were to agree to line up with Morant as his like as his springboard and Morant erupt for a dunk over 6'10" Dwight Howard, the arena at the United Center lid would blow off and the internet would explode and Twitter would be set on fire for an eternity. And we would have the dunk contest that people would remember from the late 80s and the early 90s, those show-stopping dunks from Dominique and, you know, Wilkins and Michael Jordan and Spud Webb and, you know, the mid-2000s dunk contest with Vince Carter and, you know, I'd love to see him try the Vince dunk. If he could dunk and hold himself in the rim, oh, that won that year, you know. So, you know, Blake Griffin dunked over a car. You know, I don't want guys to get hurt. And I know Morant's got to think about the fact that, oh, by the way, I'm just now starting to play back-to-backs again.
Yeah.
And my spasms were an issue in early December. But if he thinks that he's healthy in 6 weeks, man, go for it, dude. Because he's already, I'll mention and leave you with this, he's already currently in fan voting, which the next round of fan voting has got to come out later this week. He's 10th in all-star votes. He's a Memphis Grizzlies rookie with a low market basketball team. He's 10th in NBA All-Star voting.
Well, he has national appeal.
He has national appeal. This is a kid that's taking over games in certain situations. This is a kid that's well on his way to being the NBA's Rookie of the Year. He's leading all rookies in points per game, assists per game. He's already photogenic. Think about the five photos you've seen right now this year of him in the NBA. You see him. You see the dunks on Bane and Kevin Love and the block on Kyrie. There's just such a marketability, such a lovability with Ja that if he were to go play in the dunk contest and pending health, do well in it, or perhaps even win the dang thing, it really would set things on fire for him and really do great things for his future. But it's up to him, and health is the key factor here. And I know outside of a dunk contest, he just wants to go to the playoffs and win. So I think those things will matter more in the end.
All right, Ed, good luck with your all-purchase banquet. We'll, of course, read the results in Thursday's paper.
It'll be in Thursday.
Okay, so have that. And I guess we'll see you in Jacksonville.
Yep,
all right?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll see you next time. That's all the shows for this week, so we'll be back Monday with Josh Planos.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.